Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel feeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Okay, folks, here we go with another show coming up on The Suspendables. Sorry, I yelled there a little bit, but I get excited every week. On the show today, we're going to talk about a terrible, terrible story that broke about hazing in junior hockey 17 years ago, and now there is a huge, huge class action suit coming forward. We have to speak about that. COVID. What's going to happen with hockey? This thing is still not going away. Russ has got a few stories there, and actually a very funny one about all of them being at a party and testing the guy for it. Unions. I don't like them. I don't like them in the NHL. Whoops. Russ does. So we do a little back and forth on that. Lars Eller. Met a famous guy. Great story about him scoring the Stanley Cup winning goal. And what happened to the puck? That and much, much more coming up on today's show. It's the most wonderful time of the week. I'm with my girlfriend, Rusty. Hi, everyone. Jungle Jim again. There it is. Another week. I believe, Rusty, I've looked forward to it every week. Mm-hmm. But maybe there was a couple weeks where I was going, I don't know if I got it. I don't know if I got it this week. But every week for a long time now. I can't wait to get on with you. How's it going, Russ?
It's going great.
Yeah. You and me, Suspendables, coming at you again.
Hey, guess who I was with a half an hour ago?
Oh, here we go.
Luke Bryan.
Luke Bryan.
Yep. Just rolled into Gosser.
Okay, this is me going, okay, you got to pretend who you know who that is, Jimmy.
Are you shitting me? Luke Bryan, the country western singer?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. He's a freaking superstar, and he's a great guy. I met him in McKenna when I was working over there. And Kelly Chase and him are buddies from Nashville. And so Chaser goes, you got to get over here. You got to get over here. They just arrived. So I went over at the Lake Club. And Luke Bryan, Russ Cortinel. And I shook his hand. He goes, nice to meet you, Russ. And
did you know who it was yourself right away?
Of course I know who he is. And I said, Luke, I had the pleasure of meeting you in Maui. And he goes, shit, you look familiar. But I cut him off and I said, yeah, but you meet a million people a year. Anyways, we took him up to Gretzky's place. He's staying up there and got him all settled and stuff. And they're here for a week.
Is he a buyer?
He will be in 4 days. His kids are going to probably make him buy a place here after they spend 4 days here.
It's hard to believe during COVID and the economy and all that stuff that your business is through the roof, right?
It's crazy. We're having a record a record year, a record start to the season, and people are flying in, and I'll talk more about who's come in this week to look. And
cool.
And people want, you know, safe haven and an enjoyable place for the summer to stay, and Discovery delivers that in every aspect.
Cool. There's a little plug. They got to sponsor our show. By the way, they're looking at a sponsor, Russ, for our show. They haven't committed yet. And I was about to say before we started the show, let's not swear, but we blew that out of the water because of a sponsor. Anyway, the Bank of Nova Scotia is starting to mill it around, so we thought we'd give them a little plug. Maybe this will sell them, that we're giving them a freebie.
There you go.
So we're waiting to hear from them. Now, Rusty, I can't believe I'm going to ask you this, but I need some advice. Before we get to what's on the show today, I think, Russ, tomorrow or Wednesday, I think I'm going on a date, but I'm not sure if it's a date.
Oh.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. So
you like her?
Well, I do, but I've never met her. Like any time, you know, when someone says, "Well, I went on a date." Any time I ever, you know, I was married.
So it's a blind date.
It's a blind date. Yeah, I've never been on one, but it's not. But I know what she looks like, and she knows what I look like. Right. But I don't. So what happened is, I'm looking at my Twitter, and I see this comment about one of my tweets or something or a happy face or whatever, and I look at it and go, "Oh wow, look at this girl here, right?" And I zip. I tweet back a little. I like anyone who likes my tweets.
Oh, okay. Boy.
So that goes into a little convo back and forth. And she's a golfer. Of course, I'm looking at Facebook now.
Checking
her out. And then she hits me with, "We should play some golf sometime."
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's safe.
That's safe.
I think that's a great first date because yeah. You're going to have 4 hours with the person. You'll know in the first freaking three holes whether you're going to play again or actually go out with her.
Well, here's what's funny. So I'm like, fantastic. So she throws the lure out there. Okay. Yeah. We should play golf sometime. Okay.
Yeah.
In about 8 seconds, I go, "How about Wednesday?"
Okay. Oh my God. Desperado.
I bite right away. Yeah. I said, "Well, what are you, blah, blah, blah." Next thing we know, back and forths. So we're going to play Wednesday. We're going to play Wednesday afternoon. So I'm going, that's great.
I can't wait till Sunday so we can talk about her.
Exactly. Till we talk about it again. But then Russ, I'm laughing just when you said that about 4 hours on the golf course. So it's sort of like, fantastic. Got a time. Yeah, back. He's got good for you. Good for me. Blah, blah, blah. Right. Then about an hour later, I get a text from her going, I think I'd only like to play 9.
Oh.
And she says, Because I'm not in very good golf shape or something like that, you know. I thought, I know, she probably thought, well, not a bad idea if the guy's annoying, right?
What is golf shape?
I don't know.
Are you walking or taking a cart?
I think you have to walk. I don't know. So that'll be tough on me, but
wow.
That's what's coming up for me. So I'll keep you posted, Rusty. I'll text you after each hole and let you know how it's going.
I love it. I love it. I can't wait for you to...
blow it.
Yeah. No, not blow it, but to talk about it next week.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
What if on the third hole, like you're like, this is a complete disaster.
I know.
I can't stand the person. I know what you're going to do. You're going to bang it in the bushes.
Yeah.
And you're just going to keep walking.
I'll keep walking. Whereas my buddy always said, just drop to the ground and fake a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah. Emergency. Have the pro come out. Yeah. I bet you. You know what? I think it's great. I think that you'll find out if
not a bad play, right?
No, not a bad play. So now you don't have 4 hours. You got 2 hours with her. So you know she's already looking for an out too because she went from 18 to 9. So.
But I wonder if she heard this. If she just heard me say that, and she'd go, "Whoever said it was a date? We're just going golfing."
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway, a couple things to talk about on the show today, Rusty, and we'll. We keep getting your emails. You can email us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Facebook page is going well, and we've spruced up the merchandising shop. There's a button on there now. You can hit shop now. It's been a little wonky. We got some wrinkles to work it out. So we want to thank the boys at Elite, Drew and Gord, who are handling all our merch. And people have been asking for it, Russ, more and more. So
good. Yeah, I've been asking too for months and you haven't sent me anything.
I got it looked after. Don't you say that.
Yeah,
now.
Right. That's what you keep saying.
I told you. I knew you'd give me a hard time about that. Father's Day was this week.
Yeah.
And like all Father's Day, Russ, Mother's Day, right? Everyone talks about 4 or 5 days ahead of time. And then Mother's Day and then 4 or 5 days after. You know, the mothers get a lot, right?
Yeah.
The guys get, like Stevie told me this morning, how come the guys get... All right, gonna crack a beer with Dad, and that's the end. None of this. We love my mom; she's the best ever.
I was with Brandon Morrow at the Tree Bar yesterday, and Anne Marie, his wife, Guy Carboneau's daughter,
right,
and her sister's in town, or her boyfriend, and so I'm like, Anne Marie, what are you cooking for Brendan for dinner tonight? We're going to the clubhouse. I'm not effing cooking.
They don't have to, but we got to do it for them.
Yeah.
Anyway, all this talk of you know, these young kids, of course, that we'll get to about what happened here with these hazing thing with a junior hockey team. Those are 17, 18-year-olds, 16-year-olds, some overagers. And a friend of mine who got drafted, never did play in the show, got drafted by the Oilers, but he went to Denver College. But he said to me, we were talking earlier today about all this crap that's going on now in this story that broke. And he went on to say that the job of a coach with a 17-year-old, he said, if it wasn't for that guy, for that coach that he had in Denver, way more than half his job was acting like a father figure for all these kids who were there. Mm-hmm. And he said, if it wasn't for him and the way he treated us and mentored us away from the game, off the ice, you know, traveling and looking yeah. after so many things that you would probably otherwise get at home, he said his life would have been completely different. Mm-hmm. And it was because of that coach, he said, it set him on a very positive track, you know, in life. And I made a note here to ask you about that.
Well, coaches and teachers affect all kids and young adults in life. And a positive coach can help you in many, many ways that maybe you weren't getting what you needed at home, and they helped you. Teachers are the same. And then on the opposite side of the fence, they can affect and ruin lives too. Look at the coach who was molesting kids and teachers that have been caught. And mm-hmm. and so people have been, you know, positively affected by these great coaches and teachers when we're young. And I have a few really great examples that really helped me along the way. And so, yes, I agree that, you know, they can have such a positive influence on your life.
Right. How much different is it, Russ, when you do play junior hockey, college hockey, minor hockey? How big of a difference is it from there than when you do hit the big leagues?
Well, I think minor hockey, the coaches are in the room. They don't have offices. You know, they're around the players a lot. Juniors, it starts to become like a pros. The coaches have a coach's office, and then the players really own the room, mm-hmm. and the trainers are in there. Trainers usually tell the coaches what's going on so that they know they can tell the coach who's a good person, bad person, what's going on in the locker room. So they're kind of the ears and eyes of the coaches.
Is that a given? Does every player know that?
Yeah. And then it's worse in the NHL. The trainer, the coach will take one of the four or five trainers and do the exact same thing. Yeah.
Oh no.
At least the teams I played on.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they should know some things and then they shouldn't know. There's things that the trainers or the coaches shouldn't know about, but yeah, it happens. I mean, it's you know, all of a sudden you're getting called into the coach's office and the story somebody told, you're involved in it, and he knows about it. Either they have a listening device in the locker room or you know, you can't imagine one of your players telling the coach. But
I don't know if I want that gig. If I'm on the training staff and I get the
well, you just don't have shoulder. To say you don't have to say anything.
Right. True. You know? Right. Of course, this all comes on the heels about coaching. So Daniel Carcillo, who's been retired for 3 or 4 years now, former teammates back up hazing and sexual assault allegations. Former Sarnia Sting goalie Ryan Muntz collaborated everything Daniel Carcillo alleged in his hazing sexual abuse class action lawsuit against the CHL, because he said the same things happened to him. In fact, he said it left him so troubled that he became suicidal.
Oof.
It was midway through the 2002-03 season, and the Sarnia Sting were on a road trip. Rookie goalie Ryan Muntz remembers sitting at the desk in his hotel room and scrawling out a note. He had just been bullied and abused again by his veteran teammates and was jotting down some of his thoughts and emotions. It was then he admitted he was suicidal. At that moment, the veterans barged into the hotel room, grabbed the note. Not long after that, Muntz found it crumpled up and shoved under his door. It was never mentioned again, not by his teammates and not by Muntz. What happens is there's this class action suit now from a bunch of players, and Daniel Carcillo weighed in on this thing yesterday. It's impossible to know how many players will register for the suit launched by former junior players Dan Carcillo and Garrett Taylor against the Canadian Hockey League. But Muntz has said he will definitely be adding his name to it. As reported Thursday by the hockeynews.com, a class action lawsuit has been filed in the Ontario Superior Court alleging that major junior players aged 15 to 17 were routinely victims to hazing, bullying, physical and verbal harassment, physical assault, sexual harassment, and sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
The allegations made by Carcillo in particular are jarring and disturbing. In a statement of claim, Carcillo alleges that during showers, rookies were required to sit in the middle of the shower room naked while the other players urinated, spat on them and with saliva and their chewing tobacco. At least the lawsuit alleges head coach Jeff Perry walked into the shower room while this was occurring, laughed and walked out. It wasn't just that, Munn said. We all sat completely naked, wrapped around each other, wrapped around each person in front of us like a canoe. And we were supposed to sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat as they sprayed aerosol cans on us, on our shoulders to try and make it burn. It goes on and on, Russ.
Yeah.
They allege, you know, they were beaten with hockey sticks on the guys would be taped down.
Yeah.
You know, ass up in the air and then beaten with sticks.
I think everybody gets where you're.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think you don't need to go any further.
Right. So a bunch of stuff happened. And Carcillo comes out on a tweet yesterday saying it's time for everyone to be accountable for this thing and I'm moving forward. He posted a 2-minute video and invited other guys to step up if they want to come forward in this lawsuit from something that happened 17, 18 years ago.
When I was in junior, I made the Victoria Cougars. I was 17. Thank God my brother was on the team. He was 20 years old and so he was... He goes, look, you're going to get it, but you're not going to get it as bad because I'm not going to let them. So just don't fight and just go with it and know that I've got your back. So we had to put on three rookies. We might have had six rookies. I don't know. But you had to go into threes and do a show. It was called the Gong Show. And the better the show, the less of hazing you were going to get. You know, it was going to, if you put on a really good show, then you won't get it as bad. So we went in and we cracked raw eggs into dog food and milk and ate it. And all the veterans started puking.
Come on.
Yeah. They all started running for the bathroom because it was so gross. So we did that, and then one by one, we get on the table. They tape you to the table or tie you down. I can't remember. And then they shave you. They shave your balls, and then they shave your head. But they shave it in a way that they don't shave all your hair off. Like, they don't shave your ball. They just do clumps.
Right.
And so then they wrote our names and jersey numbers on our bodies. On our back, like your name, like you were wearing a jersey. So Victoria Cougars on the front and then name, number on the back. And then we had to wear a bathing suit, goggles and a snorkel and flippers. And we had to walk down Main Street, all of us down Main Street, holding up traffic. And then we had to go into McDonald's and the veterans bought us lunch and we had to sit in there and eat. And I'm from Victoria and I was so embarrassed because I know I have friends and family there.
Right.
The guys from Alberta and Saskatchewan and Nova Scotia were like, who cares?
Right.
All my friends. So that was my hazing. And then when I got to the pros, they threatened and threatened and threatened and threatened. And I'll tell you, the threats are almost worse than the actual hazing, unless they do that crap that you talked about. Because
mm-hmm.
most of it was shaving. So they would constantly, when I was in Toronto, the veteran players who were assholes, not all of them were, but the ones who were assholes bullied and bullied and bullied to the point where you'd walk in the locker room not knowing, is this the day? Is this the day? Mm-hmm. Is this the day? And so the tormenting is horrible. They constantly were doing this and saying this, and then eventually you get shaved, and once you get shaved, you know, it's over and done with. And then if you got traded to another team in your rookie year, the veterans knew you'd already been initiated, and so they weren't going to, they wouldn't happen again once you were done. And then they went to, they stopped that in the late 80s in the NHL. They disallowed it, and they had to buy a rookie dinner. The rookie dinner had to buy all the veterans dinner out, and it's expensive, and that's what they do now instead of hazing.
So you're the barometer here, Russ, not everyone else who didn't play hockey to sort of talk about this. Russ, explain to us, though, in a perfect world, when anyone saw anything, whether it's on a hockey team or in a schoolyard or in the workplace, if they saw, you know, sexual harassment or bullying in the schoolyard or hazing in the locker room, in a perfect world, you see it and then you report it, you know, then you're going to go tell someone in a perfect world. But I know, Russ, from being around hockey, the difficulty is who the frick wants to be the guy to step up and rat on your teammates. Like, talk about some of that culture, Russ, that when this thing goes on, it's not as easy for, like, if a veteran doesn't want to take part, there must be pressure on them to sort of participate in this thing when they really don't want to.
It's the assholes in the room that do it, really. Not every veteran does it. And I think it's guys who are a little freaking twisted, or they got it really, really bad because they were, you know, you get a young punk, whether you're in the NHL or junior, who's cocky, and he immediately has a freaking bullseye on his back. And that guy always gets it worse. Well, guess what he does next year? He's a veteran. Then he gives it to the kid worse than he got it. And then so on and so on, and it repeats. Like Rocky Saginaw, when he played for the Maple Leafs, they were in Winnipeg, and I was obviously not there. He's older than me, but he was so cocky that they shaved him, tied him to a massage table, or we call them medical tables, and they were in every locker room. And they tied him or taped him to it, butt naked, and they pushed him out into the middle of the ice in Winnipeg and left him there. And like stuff like that went on. And you know what? I came in knowing about the initiation and hearing the stories, and I just tried to do my job and not not be arrogant in any way and try to get along with everybody. But there was, you know, there was two or three guys on our team back then that were complete assholes, and they just every day just boom, boom, just hit you and hit you and hit you with verbal, you know, abuse and make you feel uncomfortable before every game. This one asshole, he would say to me, "Are you nervous, kid? You nervous, kid?" I'm like 18 years old. Of course I'm nervous. You know, and he's like, you know, and giggle and laugh and, you know, but just not welcoming. And so what happened for me is when I went on to Montreal and other places, I wanted the young guys to never feel the way I felt. And I always tried to make them, you know, feel welcome and, you know, cook them dinners when they were at camps and stuff. And 'cause it's brutal. I mean, some of the shit that goes on, and you know, some of those things that you read out are just disgusting. I mean, the urination, the spitting, the sexual stuff. I don't want to get into that, but whatever that is, like that, it was supposed to be heat, shaving, and embarrass you, and that was it. That's what it was supposed to be, and then it grew into how, you know, what can we do to outdo the other person, or you just get one sick mother that gets in there and goes way further than you should ever go. And then, you know, they get a guy who's weak mentally and they just freaking pick on him to the point where this kid, unfortunately, how sad that is that he was suicidal. I mean, that's just, why would you want to put somebody in a position where they feel that horrible? Are you kidding me? Like you're going to bully someone to the point who's you're going to be, and remember this, that these are teammates. like, this isn't like the enemy. These are supposed to be your comrades and your buddies, and you're going to go to war together, battle together, and you've freaking treated this guy like that? I mean, what a joke.
Right. So I think it's probably stopped, right? That doesn't happen anymore. You made the point about the league put a stop to it and said, okay, fine, the rookie dinner, you can, but you're not going to have any of this outright abuse of people, you know? Do you agree with what's happening with this thing, Russ? It was 17 years ago in the 2002-2003 season.
It's tough.
And there's a series of players who have come forward who are part of this suit. Not everyone, because Daniel Carcillo was not a very well-liked guy in the league. And I'm looking today at comments, and some people are going, really, dude? You know, I want to make a big speech about accountability. So there's that issue. But it's a tough question for you, Russ, but do you agree with this thing being brought forward now and perhaps it taken to the level of criminal activity and now a lawsuit against the league? And Russ, is the league responsible for this? Is the coach responsible for it? Or are veterans or rookies responsible for the behavior?
Well, I don't agree with the lawsuit unless there was like some sort of sexual abuse like there was with Graham James and somebody who's been put in that power. I think that calling out the teams to stop it is one thing, but suing the league, I don't get it. What is their end goal? Do they want money for what happened, or are they just trying to stop it? So if they're trying to stop it, great, good for them. But if they're suing for financial reasons, then I don't agree with that. In the NHL, I'll tell you the story in Toronto, and I've talked about this, I think, before. We had four or five rookies in Toronto. Jeff Jackson was the second round pick. I was first, and we were in St. Louis, and they said, whoever gets on the table first to get shaved, he will not get it as bad as the guys who follow. So Jax jumps up on the table. Mm-hmm. He gets shaved. We get on the bus. His head's a mess. It just looks awful. He's in tears. He's 19 years old.
Literally in tears?
No, he's in tears. Like we're sitting beside each other. It's awful. And Jerry McNamara, a GM, stands up and says, that is the last time any Toronto Maple Leaf will be shaved. You guys knew that we weren't doing this anymore, and you broke the rule. And anyone who tries to do anything to another rookie, you're going to be traded or let go or something like that. He was livid.
Good for him. Yeah.
Well, inside my inside voice is high-fiving myself and going, doing the happy dance. And I'm sitting beside my friend who just got shaved, and he's teared up, and he just went, oh my God. And it made it worse because now we weren't going to get it. But after that, the teams all said, that's it. And that's when they abolished it. And that was in the mid 80s. And that's where the rookie dinner started. And then they started like, oh, we're going to get you. We're going to get you. We're going to order the steak and lobster. We're going to order the most expensive wine. And we just started making, well, we weren't really making great money then, but it was like, it was going to hurt, and they hurt him. And so guys are like, oh shit. Some guys were like, fuck, I'd rather get shaved than right, buy dinner.
I got a phone home for money.
So they taunt the guys, and they get into the good wine and the good food, and the rookies split it. So that's how they got away from the shaving and hazing.
Yeah. Well, hopefully something will positive come out of it. I guess I'm naive if I think I got my head up my ass if I think this doesn't happen anymore. But this is the first I've heard about this in a long time.
Yeah, I honestly didn't know they were doing that stuff because I've been out of the game now for 20 right. years, and then my son plays, and he said they did like Christmas gift jokes and other stuff. But when he's coming here this week, I'm going to ask him if they did anything, because he never phoned and complained about anything in college or junior.
Right. What would have you done if he did, Russ?
If it was something really, really bad, I would have called the coach.
Okay.
I would have called the coach. And I, if it was something way offside, then
what if your kid said, "Don't call the coach, Dad. Fuck, I don't want to be that."
No, I would have called the coach if it was way offside. Not if they, if it was somewhat normal hazing, I would have. And he was not hurt. But look at, they're doing it in college. I mean, kids have freaking died in college. So the hazing thing is just another thing that kids got to stop doing, and junior teams, any team, college, junior, pro, they've got to say this is not acceptable, and it's not going to happen here. And if it happens, every person that's involved is going to be held responsible.
The Suspendables is engaged on Facebook. We welcome your comments always.
So, Rusty, the golf tournament happened again this week. We were talking about it last week. Another tournament, another record set. Minus 22 on the PGA wins it.
Wow.
Minus 26, Russ, on the Korn Ferry Tour. And we brought up this point of maybe it's a, you know, too much of a distraction. These fans have been, and the guys are playing better. We'll have to keep watching for that. Hockey is... You know, as we record this right now, now apparently there's more cases of COVID coming
through.
Austin Matthews got COVID. Speaking of that, Russ, everyone was freaking out that they went public with it. Someone broke a story before Austin Matthews went public. The newspaper said he's got COVID, and everyone's freaking out that they infringed his privacy. What do you think?
Yeah, welcome to being a politician or a celebrity.
Yeah.
Everybody knows everything, and they can't wait to tell the media. So do you want to hear my COVID story?
Of course I do. Anyway, but what I was going to say, are you okay with the newspaper doing that? Or should, like, I am, because it's COVID. I'm not waiting for a guy. I want to know who has it.
I think that elderly people should stay inside, and we should stay away from people who are sick and elderly. And I think that if you're feeling ill, you should get tested. But this whole testing thing to me is crazy. So if I get tested right now, and then I go to Costco and there's 300 people in there, do I have to come back and get tested again just because I went outside?
Right.
I don't know what, you know, I was just talking to a guy down at the paddle bar at the Lake Club, and he has about 800.
How many different bars are there? The tree bar,
The paddle bar, the Lake Club. We like our bars up here. The pool bar.
Right.
But I think there's five to answer your question. But he in his warehouse, three of the four guys tested positive because one guy in the office got sick, was feeling ill, got tested. So they had to get tested. They're feeling fine and they're positive. So now he has to send them home for 2 weeks until they're negative, and then train and rehire somebody to take over their jobs. And they're like driving forklifts in a warehouse, and they're not near each other. Like, it's so disruptive.
Right.
And not to make light of people who are losing their lives, who are older and sick, but this testing thing is out of control.
I still think it's too soon to come back. You say out of control with over the top with the testing and all that?
If you're sick, go get tested. But people who are not sick, they're finding out just because they want to know. Like, our family went and got tested. We were all negative. And we just wanted to know if we were hoping we had it, because we were all feeling good.
Right.
But
right. Apparently,
we're all going to learn over the next couple of years. We're going to learn a lot about this, but man, it just seems overdone to me.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I'm going, everyone's coming back too early here. I mean, my daughter, someone showed up at her workplace the other day with it.
Yeah.
I didn't know. And, so it was all fun and games until she phoned me going, "Dad, I might have been exposed to COVID." It's like, what the frick, you know?
Yeah. Well, somebody up here got was exposed to it, and they're quarantined for 14 days. And, you know, people initially kind of freaked out. And you know what? It's everywhere. Somebody texts me, goes, "What the F?" You know, somebody up there has COVID. I go, "It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Everybody, it's all around the world."
Right.
So, you know what? you think you're in a, if you want to be safe, lock yourself up in your apartment or your house and don't, you know, don't go out in the world and have your food delivered. But
right.
We got to get back to some sort of normalcy here and get back to work.
Speaking of testing, one of my favorite stories, Russ, is the couple go in and they test the wife. Okay. They draw blood. They can't figure out what's wrong with her. The doctor calls them back in a week later after all the testing. He said, we can't figure out either your wife has Alzheimer's.
Oh, God. You know how many times you've told this joke on the show?
No.
This is number three.
No, I didn't. Keep going.
Prove me wrong. Finish the joke.
She's got Alzheimer's or AIDS.
AIDS. And take her out in the woods. Drop her off. If she comes home, don't sleep with her.
I never told that joke.
Yeah, you have three times.
I maybe told you,
but
I don't
have Alzheimer's, you goofball.
I don't think I told it on
the
show.
Oh, my God. Listeners, everybody freaking hit Facebook and tell us how many times he's told this joke.
I did.
Three.
It's only, well, how about the guy? Oh. How about the guy they said?
This is what I've had to live with this.
Okay.
The Gretzky Fantasy Camp was 12 years, right?
I was getting killed here. I'm getting slaughtered.
And oh my God, when you got up on stage, I would go down to the tables and gamble for an hour, come back, because 1, 2, 3. What was that freaking stupid thing you did where...
Well, it's the yes-no game, Russ.
Oh, my God. 12 years in a row. You were just freaking...
You're hazing me right now. You're a comrade.
I am hazing you. You got to get new material. Oh, my God. I said earlier our show's going to be Pete and repeat, but man.
Okay. Did I tell you the story about... Okay, if you can deliver the punchline that I've told about the Scottish couple, the husband who died, and the wife went to the newspaper to put it in an obituary, mm-hmm. right? And of course, being Scottish, she immediately inquired to how much it was going to cost, right? And the guy said, "It's $2 for the first three words, and it's 50 cents for every word after that." And she goes, "I'll just take three words." And he says, "Well, what would you say on three words?" She said, "I would just say Hamish has died." And he goes, "Well, people know him, dearie. You got to say more than that. He was, you know, known in the community and co-workers and everything, you know, in the town. Terrible." He says, "I'll tell you what. I'll give you the next three words for free." And she pauses and goes, "Okay, Volvo for sale." Oh, there we
That's
go.
Good. There you
I
go.
I hit you with a new one.
Woo!
There
good
we go.
Comeback there, Pete.
Yeah, okay.
So I'll tell you my COVID story. So,
oh, okay. Yeah, let's hear it. Yeah.
A week ago, one of our...
Oh, not this story. Oh, my God. I've heard this. No, I'm kidding.
A bunch of us from Gosser get on boats. We go down to Ryan Gee's house. And he has a beautiful home on the lake, and he lives in the area. He's from Spokane, and so he's one of the Gosser members that doesn't live in Gosser. He's off property. Okay. So he says, he's like, "Chaser, Rusty, I want to have a barbecue. Let's invite these people." So there are a bunch of people are there, and his neighbor is Fritz Wolf, who's a great guy, another Gosser member. And he goes, "Fritzy has 4,000 test kits for COVID." And
wow!
And I'm cooking the grill, so I'm barbecuing. My buddy MC Mike Cameron from Calgary, he goes, he's hammered from golf and boat, and he goes, "Oh, I'll take one of the tests." Right. So Ryan and we're all having a good time. Ryan pricks his finger.
The old COVID testing party.
Yeah, blood all over the place. I'm looking at this shit show, going, "Are you freaking kidding me?" Like now he's in the car business. I'm calling him Dr. Gee. I'd be going, "You're in the car business, now you're a doctor?" And they're like, testing.
Where's all the blood coming from?
Oh, from his pricked finger. He pricks his finger. And it's bleeding all over the place. So I'm cooking steaks, and there's blood on the counter. I'm like,
"Oh,
you guys?
No.
Like, this is a joke." So, and the tests come back. It, it's immediate and it says positive. Now there's 25 people, adults and kids at this party.
Yikes.
So it's positive. So then they do it again, and they're so hammered. He goes, "Well, let's do your other finger, like it's like you're gonna get blood from a. It's gonna totally change the blood on another finger again. Blood everywhere." Jesus. Slices his finger open, and he tests positive. Uh-oh. And Ryan's wife goes, "He cannot come in the party. He's got to." And Mike's going to me, "What do I do?" And I go, "Well, the first thing you should have done is not done the frickin' test with this guy who, you know, sells cars for a living, my right. buddy." I go, I don't know what to tell you. He goes, and he had the look on his face like, "Oh my God, oh my God." So next thing you see is his boat leaving the party with his kids. They're all sitting at the back of the boat. He sleeps in a separate room.
I guess so.
He couldn't sleep all night. He gets up. He calls the local doctor that is a member, Dr. Right. Stafford. And he goes into town. He does three different tests. The one they stick up your nasal, another blood test, and a saliva test. And they're negative, negative, and we're laughing now. Like we could tell, it's one of those stories you can tell it and laugh now. But you should have seen the look on his face and everyone in the party who was scared. Like they're looking at him like he had the plague. It was brutal.
The poor guy. That's so funny. Before we go, Rusty, baseball, like I read a little piece yesterday. The commissioner's fighting with them about how they're going to figure out schedule and playoff money and all this shit. How they're going to try and fit a year in, and they're battling back and forth, the union, the players. I was never a big fan, Russ, of high performance athletes getting paid tons of dough that they have to have a union anymore. I get the idea of unions for you know, people got to make sure the wages stay where they are, but you got a deal here, a hockey league where everyone's making platoons of money and different amounts of money. Well, like, what happens, Russ, with it? Were you ever part of the union? Were you ever a player rep? Or, like, do they fucking really need it, Russ?
A union? Yeah, they do, because the owners are a union. They don't call themselves a union, but they're unionized as far as they're together. Mm-hmm. So you're a player battling against billionaires. And, you know, the NHL locks the players out. The players don't strike. They get locked out. And people need to remember that. And yeah, the players make a lot of money, but so do the owners. And they just want a fair shake. And I remember back when we were arguing over whatever, we just said, okay, show us your books. Like Patrick Waugh said to the owner, not the owner, the representative of the owner in Montreal. And he goes, okay, show us the books. And then we know you guys say you're losing money. I don't think you're losing money, but show us the books. Mm-hmm. And they would not. And then they put the building in one business, in one company name. They put the parking lots in another, and then this and that's the way it should be done. They're running a business, but it's really, really hard when there's no trust. And so the players needed a union rep to represent them against the owner's rep. Mm-hmm. And those two battle it out. And they come back to us and say, okay, the owners want this. The owners and the players are, before COVID, mm-hmm. the owners and the players were doing really, really well. And I thought, as an outsider looking in, you just sign the deal, the next deal, just sign another 5-year deal. Mm-hmm. Because the players are making a ton of money and the owners are making a ton of money. Well, now COVID hit, it's a different story. There's mm-hmm. going to be a lot of money lost. And the ownership groups are, you know, some probably aren't going to make it. And mm-hmm. there's mm-hmm. going to be a price to pay, and it'll be the salaries of the players. So I agree with the union rep. I agree with the owners having a representative. And those two battle it out. Where I do not like is when those two are on TV every day, and why would they want to settle and make a deal when they're getting interviewed and it's a big deal? When they're fighting, mm-hmm. all we see is the two representatives from the NHL and the players rep on TV every freaking hour of every single day getting interviewed. And then when they have an agreement, guess what? We never hear or see those guys rarely ever again until Bedman hands out the Stanley Cup. And that bothers me because I think they like the limelight, and the limelight is when they're fighting.
Well, the other thing is what I agree, because all of them, when they go into it at the initial stages, right, they go, okay, everyone strap in. The collective bargaining agreement's going to expire in a few months or in next year. So now we're going to start to hear about it. And they all initially say, we're not going to fight this in the press.
Right. And then they're always in the press.
And they're always in the press. If there wasn't a union, Russ, if there wasn't a players union, what would be the hardest hit that the players would take? What would be the first where they'd get not what they're getting today?
Well, it's in the past when I started, guys would get buried in organizations in the minors, and they wouldn't trade them, and they would never call them up, and they would just bury guys, and they would just ruin their careers, but their NHL careers. There were so many good players that played in the minors for different teams, and they couldn't get out because they had no right, and it was tough. You know, they had great minor league careers, but they could have been really, really good on some weaker teams, but they stockpiled players and they couldn't move them. And
what's in place now to prevent that? I should know this, but.
Well, there's terms, you know, on contracts and your free agency. If you don't get up, you don't get a chance in the first few years, you can move. And they have to do certain, both the player and a team have to do certain things, and both have, you know, the teams invest a lot of money. They have some rights with the player, and the player invests some time back to the team, and then he has some rights. So I don't know if it'll ever be perfect, but boy, the last 5 years in the NHL, maybe the last 10 years, has been damn good. And I think it's been really good for both owners and players. So I just hope they can come to an agreement, and I hope we can get through this and get fans back in the building sooner than later. Uh-huh. Because if you don't get the fans back in the building, if we don't have a season next year, I mean, gosh,
life-altering, huh?
I mean, unless you don't owe anything on your team and you got just unlimited amount of dollars, I mean, how long can you hang on?
What do you think? What do you think Russ hockey's going to look like post COVID?
Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, I'm up here with Bobby Ryan and
great story there.
And Tyler Johnson, and Lars Ellers was just here. He flew in from Washington to look at some property. So they're looking at each other like, you know, what if, and if we play in this city, what's it going to look like? And then all the dynamics that go with players getting back together. And then Julie Ellers said, you know, I'm worried for the families that are, we have six, I think she said there's six women pregnant on the team who have young babies that, if the players go there and then come back and that, you know, they're exposed to COVID from the other players. I mean, you know, it's scary. It's totally scary. But how is it going to look? I don't know. I mean, is it going to be like golf where there's no fans and they're playing against each other? But pretty impossible not to spread COVID when you're breathing and sweating and sitting beside everybody.
Did I ever tell you the story about the guy, the couple who went to the doctor to get... Oh, yeah, I did. All right.
Lars Ellers, great kid. Yeah. Played, drafted by St. Louis, played in Montreal. Plays in Washington, very serious guy. I've always liked him as a player, and just got to meet him for the first time 4 or 5 days ago when he came to Coeur d'Alene and toured with me for 4 days at Gosser. So we're playing golf on Father's Day, and on the third hole, I said, this house right here on the right is Pat Burrell, the baseball player. Just finished the house.
God, there's big leaguers there, eh? At
that place? And then right next door is Tony Robbins, the motivational speaker. And he goes, Tony Robbins? He's a friend of mine. And he goes, well, he's not really a friend of mine, but I know him really well. And I go, oh, really? And he goes, well, Leonis, is a big believer and friend of Tony Robbins. So he brought him in.
The Caps, right?
Yeah.
The
owner? So he brought him in to do a seminar for us. So he says they sit us in this room, and then he calls. He goes, I want someone to come on stage, and he picks me. So Lars gets up there and he goes, okay, what's your inner animal? Make the noise of yell out what kind of animal you are and make the sound of that animal. And he yells out tiger and roar like this. And the guys stand up and they're clapping and, and he builds off this, and the media found out about it. So every time he scores a goal, they play Eye of the Tiger.
There we go.
And so he gets the overtime winner in Vegas to win the cup. I think it's game five in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And somebody on Vegas, after they're celebrating, took the puck and flicked it up into the stands. The TV camera followed the puck and saw the person who caught it.
Right.
So Lars, they win the cup. Forgets about the puck. And they celebrate, and he gets a call from the owner of the Caps, Leonis, and he goes, I got a friend of yours here. He wants to say hello. And he says, who is it? And he goes, it's Tony Robbins. So he goes, hey, Tony, how are you? And he goes, hey, Tiger, because now they all call him Tiger.
Right.
Hey, Tiger, I got something for you. And he goes, what do you have? And he goes, you know that puck that you scored the overtime goal in Vegas? He goes, yep. He goes, well, I found out who the person was who caught it, and I tracked him down or her down, and I bought it, and I'm giving it to you as a gift.
Wow.
Isn't that a great story?
Nice.
So he has this puck that Tony Robbins, and he doesn't know how much he paid. He didn't tell him, but he presented him with that puck. And I just thought, what a wonderful story. And it all just, it came out from just pointing out that Tony Robbins' house is right there at Gosser.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I would have probably gone after the guy who grabbed the puck and threw it into the crowd, first of all. I said, fuck, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? My brother Mess threw his gloves to me when they won the Stanley Cup. Uh-huh. Over the glass. I was in row four, sitting with Glennie Gretzky. They win the cup. He's trying to get us to climb over the glass. And I'm going, no, fuck, I'm not going to kill myself. You know, you'd castrate yourself.
Yeah, and you'd had about 12 beers by then.
I did. I was brave enough at them, but I thought, no, I better not. And so he threw me his gloves, and everyone let me grab them. They knew, you know, that I knew them and shit. And then I gave them to my brother, right? Because as this unbelievable item, game-worn Stanley Cup final game-worn gloves, you know? And, because I'm not really a collector, you know. I have stuff, but I give it away. Stevie has an article that I got from Gretz from the Olympics, and I let people have it with the deal they can't sell it, you know. But I never said anything to my brother. I just, look at these gloves, you know. Here's the story behind them, and what a great conversation piece, you know. So a year later, I'm at his house. I'm looking around going, figured they'd be hung above the fireplace or something. Where's the gloves? He goes, fuck, I wore them, you know, in my beer league, and the palms all ripped, you know, so I threw them out.
Oh, God. You've told that story, too.
Oh, did I?
Okay. You're on a roll, Pete.
Now I'm all nervous about telling stories. Anyway, Rusty, good stuff. Bit of a sensitive topic that that you brought it today to talk about that. We'll have to follow that story and many others along the way. You want to email us, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Also, we got our Facebook page that you can check out with a bunch of stuff on there. So, Russ, you have yourself what'd you get for Father's Day? 7 pallets of White Claw and 150 cigars or what? What
no
did you get?
Presents, just a lot of love messages from my kids.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
They're all in, two are in L.A., one's in Kalamazoo, so.
Do you know what I asked my kids for Father's Day?
Who's their father?
No, would you? Yeah, right. One day you're going to have your own kids. So are you, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I asked them, will you send me to Gosser for the summer like my buddy Russ? That's a nice Father's Day gift. You get out of here, Russ. You go back to doing what you're doing. And we'll talk to everybody next week. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim, and Russ Gordon. See you later, Rusty.
See you, bud.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.